September, 1921. In the small village of Opau, Germany, residents prepare for another routine day. Children arrive at school, while many of their parents report to work at the local fertilizer plant. But this is no average morning. Inside one of the large storage silos at the plant, the chemical composition of the fertilizer has changed. As an explosives team prepares to perform a routine procedure, they cannot know that the lives of everyone in this small village and much of the surrounding area are about to be completely shattered. I'm Les Stroud. I've survived some of the deadliest environments on Earth, but there are some things that even I might not walk away from. This is Deadly Disasters. Today, the Opau explosion. Wednesday, September 21st, 1921. The morning fog has yet to clear on this crisp fall day in southwest Germany near the French border. Yeah. 55 miles south of Frankfurt, in the small community of Opau, 38-year-old Hermann Humpa prepares for another day on the job at the local BASF chemical factory. One of the company's most esteemed employees, Humpa, has been the plant's explosive expert for 15 years. Hermann lives with his wife and 8 children in one of Opau's most prestigious neighborhoods. Here is Hermann's grandson, Franz Hoff.
They lived on Soda Street on the property of the BASF. And these houses and residential units were only intended for BASF employees who were very highly regarded. They raised their 8 children here, and they were a happy family.
On this average day, as the children enjoy their morning routine, they have no idea that these moments they're spending in the company of their father are precious. Founded in 1865, BASF is originally a producer of soda and acids for dye construction. But by the turn of the century, they are doing early in-house research on nitrogen. In 1913, with the launch of the ammonia synthesis process, BASF moves into the mass production of ammonium nitrate for fertilizers. For this new venture, the company requires a new facility. BASF archivist Lothar Meinzer.
Und als Standort für diese neue Fabrik hat man sich eben
as a location for this new factory, they chose an area which lay on the edge of the town of Opau.
Settled in the Middle Ages, the village of Opau has seen its share of unrest. In the 17th century, the region is twice devastated, once during the 30 Years' War, and again, thanks to the conquests of Louis VIII. But in 1921, the village is thriving, thanks in large part to the presence of BASF. Situated on 8 hectares of land, the 8-year-old factory has a workforce of 8,000 people. It's Europe's largest chemical plant. At 7 a.m., as the night shift ends, 41-year-old night foreman August Amann passes the torch to his day shift counterpart. His shift has been uneventful, and his grandson, Georg Schatter, describes the exchange between the two men.
They usually discuss everything that happened on the shift, and what to look out for. And this sometimes takes longer, and is sometimes shorter. On this morning, he and his colleague didn't have much to talk about, so he was able to leave earlier than he normally would.
A few minutes later, Auguste hops on his bicycle and prepares for the short ride to his home in the community of Ludwigshafen. At the same moment, Hermann Humpa is arriving for his shift at the BASF plant. It'll be a busy morning. Hermann will be showing the ropes to a new trainee, 16-year-old Will Fortuna. The teenager lives on a farm just outside of Opau with his father. In honor of this job that is sure to boost the family income, Will has bought himself a new pair of shoes. As he falls in step beside his superior this September morning, the earnest 16-year-old is grateful for this opportunity. Work at the plant is steady. Despite its emerging popularity, the demand for fertilizer is a seasonal one, limited to spring and fall. Because of this, BASF uses giant metal silos to store huge stockpiles. Each silo is able to hold up to 50,000 tons of fertilizer. Chemist Mark Hailwood elaborates on this practice.
This led to one of the major problems with the fertilizers, because once you've built up a pile of 25 meters of fertilizer, it starts to compact. It ends up with a very, very hard salt, almost like rock, at the base of the pile. Breaking up this salt rock was very tedious. And to do this by hand with pickaxes and shovels would have taken a long time, and so they resorted to using explosives.
This is a far cry from the backbreaking work of farm labor. For young Will, the chance to shadow a senior explosives expert is exciting. Franz Hoff, Humpa's grandson, describes the day's procedure.
The loosening blast consisted of a small muffled explosion, like a puff. And then these fertilizer salts were broken up into 20, 30, or 40 centimeter chunks. And these cubes were ground up and then put into sacks, and they were sold.
As Auguste Demann steers his bicycle towards home, Hermann and his young assistant Will are heading into silo 110. Here's BASF archivist Lothar Mainzer.
They say they had set off explosions like these close to 20,000 times with absolutely no problems. They believed that this method was completely safe.
But as employees have complained before, silos aren't just for fertilizer at BASF. Information is often siloed as well. Changes in the manufacturing process aren't communicated throughout the workforce. Today is no exception. Recently, the manufacturing process of the nitrate-rich fertilizer has been modified. The humidity level and density of the fertilizer has been lowered, a fact not known by the explosives team. These seemingly minor changes can have varying, unpredictable results. Back at their home on Soder Street, Hermann's wife, 36-year-old Maria Humpa, has seen three of her eight children off to school. The five children remaining at home help their mother clean up from the morning meal. Across the river, in neighboring Ludwigshafen, Auguste Demann's wife Anna looks in on their infant daughter, Anna Marie. While the five-month-old sleeps in her crib, her mother listens for the familiar sound of her husband's bicycle. About 10 miles to the west, across the Rhine River, another mother plays a waiting game. Katerina Henrik is 9 months pregnant with her son, Paul.
Das heißt, meine Eltern bei meinen Großeltern im Bauernhaus.
My parents lived at that time with my grandparents in a farmhouse in Mannheim-Käfertal. At the time, my grandfather was in the stable, occupied with feeding the animals, and my mother was almost ready to give birth but was not yet having contractions.
Despite her delicate condition, Katerina begins to tackle the ever-present housework. She hopes that today will finally be the day baby Paul arrives. Just after 7:30 a.m., a train loaded with workers for the day shift is arriving at the fertilizer plant. Inside silo 110, Herman and his team prepare sticks of dynamite to loosen 4,500 tons of tightly packed fertilizer for bagging and shipping. Herman oversees the placement of the dynamite. Herman's grandson.
Certainly in this occupation, a great deal of attention was paid to safety, and he also had a good reputation.
As far as Herman is concerned, it has always been safe. Today is just another day, just another job. What he doesn't know is that the chemical composition of the fertilizer has slowly changed over time into something very deadly. Unaware of the danger, Herman gives the go-ahead, and as his young trainee Will looks on, the plunger drops. An immense column of fire licks the sky before falling in a heap of rubble. Fire roars through the factory as everything is engulfed in a fog of thick black smoke. For residents of Opal, this is just the beginning. September 21st, 1921. In the village of Opal, 90 miles south of Frankfurt, Germany, an explosion engulfs the local BASF factory. Changes in the fertilizer's manufacturing process have resulted in an increased concentration of ammonium nitrate. If that compound seems familiar today, it may be because of this. August 4th, 2020. In the port of Beirut, Lebanon, a nuclear-sized blast levels a warehouse containing a large amount of ammonium nitrate. The massive explosion kills over 200 people and injures 7,500 more, leaving 300,000 homeless. Over the five-year period that the ammonium nitrate sat in storage, the components had separated. In Opal, on this September morning in 1921, the amount of ammonium nitrate on site at the factory is nearly double that of Beirut. The impact of the blast in Opal is felt as far away as Munich, which is almost 170 miles southeast of Opal. It sends many citizens there into a panic. At the Opal factory, the train full of workers is blown off the tracks. The massive concussion spreads over the BASF plant like rolling thunder, instantly turning factory buildings to rubble as it rockets towards the village. Archivist Lothar Meinzer recalls the chaos.
Ein schreckliches Bild muss ich in Oppau selbst.
There must have been a scene of horror in Oppau, because there were many older style houses built in the old brick style.
Ein alter, massiver Backsteinbauweise.
The pressure created by the blast was strong enough to push walls in, and in these houses, when one wall fell, it toppled the whole house.
On Soder Street, Maria Humpa feels the ground shake as her entire home is rattled by the blast. Maria gathers her five children, certain it must be an earthquake. Her thoughts race. She worries for the safety of her husband, Herman, and their three other children who have left for school. In nearby Ludwigshafen, the concussion shakes the home of Anna and August Amann to its foundation. Down the hall to the nursery, Anna hears the sound of shattering glass, and her heart drops into her stomach. Her descendant, Georg Schoter, remembers.
Meine Mutter war damals,
My mother was a child at that time, 5 months old, and was lying in her crib. And at the time of the explosion, a mirror fell off the wall, directly on top of her.
Meanwhile, her husband August is thrown from his bike when the blast occurs. Despite being more than 2 miles from the factory, he's hit with debris which knocks him unconscious. Surviving villagers stream into open areas, fearful of another explosion. The streets are engulfed in thick black smoke. Fires burn intensely inside piles of debris where houses once stood. Here's historian Dr. Stefan Mortz.
All the photos and all the eyewitness reports tell one masses of people moving up and down, more or less completely disoriented, traumatized, often bleeding, looking for their children who had been at school.
Many of the wounded have been blinded by the force of the explosion. Factory foreman August Amann regains consciousness at the side of a road. Unlike so many of his neighbors, he has survived. His grandson, Georg Schoter.
Fortunately, he was not seriously injured by the explosion. But had he been inside the factory a few minutes earlier, he would have been dead.
Injured and confused, all he can think of is the fate of his wife and infant daughter. He rushes home as fast as he can to find that, miraculously, his family is also safe. Despite having a mirror fall on top of her, his 5-month-old daughter, Anna Marie, is uninjured.
The mirror broke, but nothing happened to her, thankfully. I assume that because it was September, it wasn't very warm, and that she was well covered, and perhaps it was fortunate that she had a thick blanket on when the mirror fell down.
In the village, entire blocks of houses have been ripped apart, trees uprooted, and railway lines bent and twisted. Historian Dr. Stefan Mortz describes the scene.
Damage was enormous. All the 1,000 buildings of Oppau were damaged. About half of them were just flattened or whole world, whole walls torn away. All the windows had gone, all the doors had gone. Most of the furniture in the rooms had just been hurled around, so there was not much left for most people.
The BASF factory itself is a smoking ruin.
It was a picture of horror and devastation. The factory itself, in and around the explosion, was completely destroyed. Where the silo was, there was an enormous crater, a crater that measured 20 meters deep, 90 meters wide, and 125 meters long. It is quite visible from the pictures taken from the air, which makes it quite clear how horrible the explosion was.
With the First World War so recent in memories, many initially wonder if this is an airborne attack, but it's not. Dr. Stefan Mortz.
The difference, for example, to air raids or to the results of a war is that it didn't happen in a night or didn't happen in several weeks or even months, but that it was really within seconds that the whole damage occurred. What human hands create in 1,000 years is flattened in seconds.
In a nearby village, the blast throws mother-to-be Katerina Henrik off her feet. Her son Paul describes what happened next.
My grandfather was in the stable when the explosion occurred. He ran to the house to see what happened because the windows in the stable exploded. And so did the ones in the house.
While surviving villagers move into open areas, fearful of another explosion, others scramble to find lost family members or to aid those crying for help under piles of broken brick and stone. Archivist Lothar Meinzer explains.
The first thing to do was, of course, to find the dead and rescue the injured. One also had to think quickly about where to put all of the injured and everyone that didn't have a house. That meant they had to look for emergency lodging. They quickly had to create lodging in schools and public buildings.
Emergency services are alerted. Many are fearful another blast may come at any time. Local volunteers and service personnel are aided by troops from neighboring France who create a safety line around the site. They set up triage centers and field kitchens to care for the hurt, the hungry, and the homeless. Bodies, many of them buried as much as 6 meters under the rubble, are laid in rows on the factory grounds and in open fields. Their injuries are covered with straw, their faces hidden behind handkerchiefs. Family members walk the rows searching for missing loved ones. Farmer Heinrich Portuna is one of those who has rushed to check for survivors. He searches faces, frantically looking for the one that belongs to his 16-year-old son, Will. Soon, he too is scanning the rows of corpses. As he searches, the farmer is stopped cold when his eyes fall upon Will's new shoes. Young Will Portuna will never come home to his father again. While others are fortunate to survive, as Dr. Stefan Mortz describes, they must still deal with injury and death.
BASF lorries, ambulances, even private motor cars moved into Oppo and tried to help with the transport of the injured people to the neighboring hospitals.
Katerina Henrik and her family watched the exodus of emergency vehicles pass by their farm near Mannheim. Suddenly, they have an emergency of their own, also brought on by the explosion at Oppau. Katerina's son, Paul Henrik.
Vor Schrecken.
My mother began to give birth because of the shock. And between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, I was born. I was born not long after the explosion.
But the miracle of birth is far from the minds of most families in the middle of this disaster. They want answers, anything that will tell them how something like this could have happened. Family members of BASF employees storm what's left of the factory gates, demanding to know what has happened to their loved ones. Hermann Humpa's grandson, Franz Hoff, describes.
The crowd found out that someone named Humpa was employed as a blasting expert. And when they found out that this could only involve the BASF blaster and that he must be to blame, the people were very upset, and they went to Soda Street and threw rocks at the windows.
Hermann's wife, Maria, is horrified when the angry mob tries to get inside.
The people apparently cried out, "Lynch the children and lynch the family." So my grandmother took the children up to the second floor and then barricaded the front door so the people could not get in.
Das muss der schlimmste Moment gewesen sein.
The worst moment must have been at that time, because now she knew she was alone with 8 children, and she knew in her heart that her husband would never come home again.
If you have ever wanted to make your home feel safer, there's no better time than now. This week, our friends at Simply Safe are giving Deadly Disasters listeners 40% off their award-winning home security. Simply Safe has everything you need to make your home safe. Indoor and outdoor cameras, comprehensive sensors, all monitored around the clock by trained professionals who send help the instant you need it. Simply Safe was even named Best Home Security System of 2021 by U.S. News and World Report. You can customize a system for your home easily online in minutes and even get free custom recommendations from Simply Safe. These are Simply Safe's biggest discounts of the year. You can get a complete home security system starting at just over $100. There are no long-term contracts or commitments. It's a really easy way to start feeling a bit more peace of mind. So take advantage of Simply Safe's holiday sale and get 40% off your new home security system by visiting simplysafe.com/deadly. Again, that's simplysafe.com/deadly for 40% off your entire system. What are you waiting for? This offer ends soon. In the morning hours of September 21st, 1921, the village of Oppau, Germany, is almost totally obliterated by a giant explosion at the local fertilizer factory. When all of the bodies are recovered, explosives expert Hermann Humpa is one of the 561 people killed by the explosion. 1/3 are BASF employees, the rest are residents of Oppau and neighboring communities. Another 2,000 are injured, many critically. On September 25th, the dead are buried, with a memorial service attended by German dignitaries and survivors. Many of those survivors, 7,500 in all, are left homeless by the disaster. Three quarters of the houses in Opau cannot be saved and must be rebuilt from the ground up. Archivist Lothar Meinzer explains.
Die Stadt Opau hat das sogenannte Hilfswerk Opau.
The city of Opau created an agency to help the inhabitants of Opau rebuild their houses or repair them and various things like that.
Die Stiftung hat die BASF einiges an Geld dazu bezahlt.
And the BASF contributed money to this agency, and they also paid the financial compensation for the widows or the children or the relatives of the dead.
Despite its willingness to provide compensation, BASF refuses to take responsibility for the disaster, stating that whatever caused the explosion was beyond the scientific knowledge of the time.
Alles, was man am Ende nur sagen konnte, ist, dass es nur im Grunde nur eine Erklärung gibt, dass nämlich aus welchem.
The only thing that could be said after the investigation was that for some reason the chemical composition as well as the physical properties of the fertilizer, the ammonium nitrate sulfate saltpeter, changed in the silo, so that the loosening blast resulted in an explosion.
Whatever the cause, survivors of the Opau explosion must put that terrible September morning behind them. But for many, it's a day they cannot forget. Georg Schader recalls his grandfather, night foreman Auguste Mann.
Aber ich denke, so wie meine Mutter es erzählt hat.
I think, as my mother told us, that this greatly affected my grandfather. He suffered because of it. And there was naturally also his luck that nothing happened to him. It all affected him emotionally, and he was very struck and moved by it all.
For newly widowed Maria Humpa and her eight children, the explosion brings upheaval. Her grandson Franz Hoff explains.
Also in die Soderstraße zurück sind sie nicht mehr. Die haben sich eigentlich im.
My grandmother and her children never returned to Soda Street, and so this whole situation resulted in this complete change of the family. But my mother told the story again and again, and all these things stayed deep inside us. And we also talked about them with our own children, so that the entire story always remained vivid for us.
The memory is particularly vivid for Paul Henrik too, but for a different reason.
Und auch alle Leute, die da in dem Ort gewohnt haben.
Everyone who knew my parents and grandparents knew that I was the one born at the time of the Opau disaster. As I got older, everyone knew who I was, and then they thought about the Opau disaster.
One of the largest chemical companies in Europe, the BASF fertilizer plant still stands near Opau today. Technology introduced in the 1950s prevents the product from packing together in the silo so that blasting it apart is no longer necessary. But 100 years after Opau, the preventable blast at the port of Beirut is a wake-up call about the dangers of long-term ammonium nitrate storage. Though those lost in the explosion at Opau are long gone, Lothar Meinzer and other historians who share accounts of the Opau explosion keep their legacies alive.
Gedächtnis an die Explosion von 1921 noch sehr lebendig ist und dass auch die Erinnerung.
The memory of the explosion in 1921 is still very present, and also the extent of the destruction is deeply rooted in society today. And every year at the grave sites and the monuments, wreaths are laid down on the 21st of September to remember the explosion.
This episode of Deadly Disasters was produced by Ajit Parkal and Miklas Perlis for Storios, adapted for audio by Lisa Brooke, and sound designed and mixed by Brian Eimer at Images and Sound. This podcast is adapted from the television series Disasters of the Century. Our executive producer is Ron Getz, and our supervising producer is Robert Locker. Deadly Disasters is a production of Partners in Motion. I'm Les Stroud.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.